Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And I have a great advice for you on sleeping. I'm answering all the questions on sleeping. I get so many questions about sleep. And, you know, for me as a mom of four, I have been there in the trenches through newborn stage, through toddler tantrums, through teen late night. You know, people will say, like, how did you do your doctoral degree when you had four young children? And I say they go to bed at like 8 o'clock. That gave me a couple of hours that I could have some study time. But when they're teens, they don't go to sleep. Now, I love it. Don't get me wrong, but it is absolutely the funniest thing ever when I've got kids just hanging out. Maybe all of a sudden we find ourselves in my office. Maybe it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And those times are really precious. But as you go through life, you have different phases of sleep. And when people are having babies, they'll ask me, what advice do you have? And I tell them, sleep now, because you will not sleep for the rest of your life. And those of you who have littles, who have young ones, you think, oh, we'll sleep when they're older. You don't. And then when they go to college, you worry about them. And then when they go out on their own, you still worry about them. But God designed us for sleep. And we've spent 2 weeks talking about this. Last week, we talked about bedtime routine. If you're just joining in on our 52 Habits for Healthy Families, know that every week, we're talking about essential building blocks for healthy families, no matter what age or stage of life that you are in. These are research-backed, science-supported, scripture-promoted ways to improve your relationship. And so far, we haven't talked about anything particularly magical. There is nothing that is instant. But just by cultivating these disciplines over time, by stacking these habits into what you're already doing, if you do that consistently over time, I promise you, you'll see a change in your life. You'll see a change in your relationships. If you've missed out on some of those habits, just go to find any podcast platform, AFR.net, AFR's app, and look for the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes, and you'll be able to catch up on those as just little one-minute recaps, or you can catch the Friday show. Every Friday, I've been talking about this and answering questions. We are in week 9. Can you believe it? We are just barreling through. We're almost through the first 3 months of the year here, but we've talked about prayer. We've talked about memorizing scripture, going to church, playing worship music, practicing gratitude, daily devotionals, morning and nighttime routine. And this week we're talking about sleep hygiene. So we're starting out with just those foundational rhythms. These are all rhythms that should be in your life, that should be there on a daily basis. And I'm going to spend a bit of time today talking specifically about sleep, because as I said, I get a lot of questions about sleep and does it really matter and how do we beat the rat race that we're all on? It seems like everybody's tired. And when I talk to teenagers, especially, or parents, or usually you say, how are you doing? You know, it used to be politically correct or socially acceptable to say, oh, I'm fine. But now it just seems like collectively as a society, all we say is, well, I'm tired. I have banned that in my house. I'm like, I think if you're tired, well, then we've got to do something different. We've got to modify your schedule. We've got to prioritize your rest because it impacts your life so much that when people ask you how you are, you just say, I'm so tired. Are you tired of being tired? I am tired of being tired. And let me tell you, there are some habits that I have gotten really, really good at. Daily devotional, like pretty much every day without fail. Sleep, oof, I'm still a work in progress. So I'll be sharing some of my journey alongside that as we've been talking and having some guests on to talk about this. So let's dive in and let's talk about sleep hygiene. This may be a new phrase to some of you thinking, okay, I know what hygiene is, but what is sleep hygiene? Well, sleep hygiene just refers to the habits and practices that promote quality sleep. What are the things that you do on a daily basis? What is your environment? What are your choices, your activities that help you to have quality sleep? Now, sleep hygiene, and I'll tell you more about some of the specific elements of that, but listen, it regulates your body's internal clock and it improves the rest that you get, meaning that when you do go to sleep, you get better sleep. And it just enhances our overall well-being. When we're tired, we're irritable, so our emotions aren't that great. We don't think very clearly, so our mental status is not that great. And honestly, it does other things like weakens our immune function. So when you're tired, we are chronically fatigued, you're probably going to be at risk for getting sick more often. And there are other long-term health risks that are actually kind of scary if you look at them. We're talking about impacting your major organs, your heart. And so it is important for us to get control of this because sleep hygiene, it helps our brains in the way that we think. It improves our memory, our learning, our concentration, and it also reduces the risk of mental health challenges like anxiety, depression, or just plain moodiness. It strengthens our immune system. It helps kids grow and develop optimally like they should. It reduces the risk of overweight, of heart disease, of diabetes, and those things are all really important. But I think the one thing that I want to concentrate on today is how sleep hygiene, it helps our kids to behave better. It helps them to regulate their emotions. And that improves our family dynamics. That changes the way that we function on a daily basis because you've got parents then who are more able to maintain patience and have the energy that is required for constant teaching and training that's required all during the day, or just maintaining those conversations and reserving some emotional energy for the people in your life that matter. When you're going to work and you have a job, well, you often are going to reserve your emotional energy for that thing that is putting food on the table. And then your family gets your leftovers. And I know I tend to struggle with that. I want to make sure my family gets the bulk of my emotional reserve. And to do that and to still work and still be here on the radio with you all, it means I've got to make some changes in how I sleep. It also just encourages healthier routines and helps you to be consistent. Now, some of the most common sleep disruptors, the things that we see most often, the biggest offenders, if you will, are having screen time before bed. You know, I step on that soapbox all the time and I'm preaching to myself, but I'll say it again. Exposure to blue light from our devices, it suppresses melatonin production in our brain. And, you know, it's so hypocritical of us as a society. Let me just be really blunt here, because all of a sudden we see melatonin supplements soaring. Everybody wants a melatonin supplement. And by the way, you should talk to your primary care provider about whether or not you should take that. Even if it's just over the counter, you should talk about that. But how counterproductive is it for us to, I'm not going to change the way that I'm looking at my phone right before I go to bed. I'm just going to literally put my phone on the nightstand and then shut my eyes and go to sleep. But hey, I took a melatonin, so I'm going to compensate with an instant supplement for my poor behavior choices. I know that sounds really harsh, and I'm right there with you, but this is what we're doing as a society. We want to make poor health choices, and we want an instant fix to make that better. And it's just not sustainable. You won't find satisfaction in that rather than just being disciplined to take care of our bodies. And another common offender is just having an irregular sleep schedule, not going to bed at the same time, not waking up at the same time. And it really does disrupt our circadian rhythm, which if you look into the science of that, it's fascinating at how it impacts the way we think, the way we move, the way we respond, the way that we have emotions. So that's a really tough thing. That's actually one of the easiest things to do. Just start trying to go to bed at roughly the same time. Maybe if that's not you, maybe within the same 2 hours, you know, window, trying to go to bed at the same time. Other offenders, caffeine and sugar. If we consume stimulants too late in the day, that interferes with our sleep. If we have sugar, then that's going to give us a quick high with a quick crash. also one of the harder things, one of the harder offenders to manage is being stressed and anxious when we're worried, when we're overstimulated. And I talked last week with Dr. Vicki Petz, a Petz Casper, a lifestyle medicine physician, and she had some great advice about how when we go to sleep and we start to pray at night, a lot of times we start thinking about all of our burdens and we start presenting those before the Lord. And then the next thing you know, we're worried. And so how can we start our prayers with gratitude, or reserve those prayers at night for gratitude and pray about all of the burdens of our day in the morning when we're up and getting going? That can be just a great, simple way to start. And then the other sleep disruptors are that I'll talk about today are sleep environment, having noise, having it too hot or too cold. Cue all of the arguments between the spouses, right? Isn't there one spouse that I want it to be like an igloo in here and the other is saying it's frigid, I want heater on, I want light, I want dark, I want noise, I want quiet. All of these things can be really difficult, but they affect our sleep quality. So let me just go through some basics on some basic sleep hygiene, and then I'm going to talk to you about some specific struggles for teens. We'll start there. But one of the best things that you can do, as I've already alluded to, is establish a consistent sleep routine. Go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time. And stick to it to regulate your body's internal clock. And I know many of you won't like to hear this, but if you're really, really wanting to dive in, it's best to do that even on the weekends. Now, I don't know if I'm ready to do that yet, but I will commit to I'm trying to do that Monday through Friday. Just having a fixed bedtime and wake up time to get your body's circadian rhythm just back on track, that can be a helpful first step. And then think about the bedtime routine. We talked about this last week. Whatever that is, it does not have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be social media worthy, but are you doing the same three things? Can you think about three things that you do the same every night before you go to bed? Whether that's just telling your spouse that you love them, telling your kids that you love them, telling them good night like the Waltons, that can be really helpful. I love that. Good night, John Boy. Okay, I digress. But are you saying a scripture verse? Are you brushing your teeth? Are you saying a prayer? What three things are you doing that you're connecting to bedtime? And then just really think about, what are you doing before bed? Are you playing video games? Are you having really intense discussions? Are you working? Are you doom scrolling? What are you doing that's preventing your mind from being at peace? So that's the first thing. Just looking at, what's your consistent sleep routine? Number two, how do you self-soothe? I know that sounds so like you're like, self-soothe, what is that? Well, this is actually something that we need to teach kids to do. How do you fall asleep independently? How do you fall asleep on your own? Well, you need to go to bed when you're drowsy but still awake so that kids can learn to put themselves to sleep. If you're rocking them, I know I'm guilty. I had one kid that I would rock all the way to sleep and then they didn't know how to put themselves back to sleep. But that can be difficult. So for younger kids, that might be comfort objects. For older kids, that might be relaxation techniques. Prayer can be really good. And for you, if you wake up in the night, what do you do if you wake up in the night? Do you go immediately to prayer? Is there a scripture that you can recite in your head? What are you going to do when you wake up in the night? And number three, limit screen time before bed. You really should stop screen use at least an hour before bedtime. That blue light suppressing your melatonin, which is a hormone that's essential for sleep. So if you are using it, use a blue light filter or a night mode setting. That can be really helpful. And hey, here's something really radical. Just think about, don't keep your phone right next to your bed. If you want just a baby step, keep it across the room so you're not tempted just to reach on the nightstand to grab it and see. You can get this really, you know, a fancy contraption called an alarm clock that will tell you what time it is. I know, that's absolutely, now I'm just speaking like crazy talk, right? But really, those are the things that we can do. Establish a consistent sleep routine, limit screen time before bed. And when we come back, I'll talk about some of the other things that we do during the day. I'll talk about the environment, looking at the environment of your bedroom. And we'll start talking about some of the trends that are currently on social media telling teens how to sleep healthy. But is it? I think you know it's Probably not. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more on sleep hygiene on Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. See you on the other side of this break. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Then sings my soul. Welcome back, friends. That is How Great Thou Art, Until That Day by Matt Redman, and one of my favorite songs to listen to at any time of the day or night. And today we're talking about nighttime and sleep hygiene, how much it impacts our health. And it is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, so I'm going to answer some questions I get about sleep. But this is one of the things that's really important. When I have families who come into my clinic and they're worried about anxiety or depression or blood sugar issues or just other health issues that are presenting, some of the foundational things that I start to ask are, how are you sleeping? Because sleep impacts our bodies, our minds, our spirits. It impacts our holistic health. And before the break, I was talking about some specific strategies for sleep hygiene. We've talked about having a consistent sleep routine, going to bed at the same time, having those same three things that you do at night, limiting your screen time before bed, and then thinking about what are you eating or drinking before bed. You really shouldn't eat a big meal and go to bed. I know that that seems like common sense, and yet sometimes we do that. We have a snack, which turns into a meal, right? Or thinking about the caffeine that you're taking before bed. These are just kind of some common sense things. But also thinking about physical activity. Are you moving your body during the day? Because if you're sitting at a desk all day and then you come home and you sit and you just sit all day, well, then your body is tired, but your mind is tired. And then you've got this disruption in your circadian rhythm. So think about, are you making your body as tired during the day as your mind is? And so maybe that's just taking a little walk when you get home, or taking a walk after dinner, or getting up and doing something active. That actually might help your sleep. Let's talk about the environment. Let's talk about the sleep environment, because it does play a crucial role in sleep quality. Now, your bedroom, ideally for most people, the best ideal sleep conditions are going to be cool, dark, and quiet. And you got to think about your lighting. Can you dim the lights an hour or two before bedtime? Can you turn off an overhead light? Turn on a lamp that's just going to signal to your brain, hey, it's time to start winding down. Maybe you need to invest in some blackout curtains to block the outside light. Maybe you need to consider just a night light that with a color that's red. Actually, those colors are less disruptive to melatonin production. So look into different colors of nightlight. That might actually help. the ideal room temperature. Now, I know I'm going to start a lot of fights here, so please don't come after me if you're going to say, oh my goodness, I don't like that temperature. But the ideal temperature is about 70 degrees. I know. But research shows generally for most people, and maybe you're not that most people, a cool environment helps prevent better sleep. But think about, you know, what is your bedding? Are you making your bed during the day? That is one of the most important things that you can do. Getting into bed and a bed that's clean, that's freshly made, it really is different. And that is a habit that I have started doing. And I think about my sweet granny who would tell me, Jessica, your bed needs to rest during the day so that it can work at night to help you get good sleep. And so make it so that it can rest. And then thinking about noise, mattress, what are the distractions in your bedroom? You know, how are you, if your bedroom is not a dedicated sleep space, that can make it difficult to sleep in there too. If you're working in there, if you have a desk in there, if you are watching TV, if you have toys or school supplies or other electronics or things that are telling you you do other things, you're sitting in your bed all day long, you know, looking at social media or sitting with your laptop in your bed, well, then it can be hard for your brain to say, oh, wait, is this laptop time or is this sleep time? I don't know. So only using your bed for sleep or intimacy is really important. But there are also some other lifestyle factors that you can think about. If your family is not sleeping really well, think about this. And we talked about this with Dr. Vicki Petz-Casper. Exposure to natural light. So are you having some morning sunlight exposure to tell your body, okay, it's time to initiate that sleep-wake cycle? So what can you do to get some sunlight in your day in the morning? And then limit those bright artificial lights at nighttime to prevent that melatonin disruption. Other lifestyle things are being overly scheduled. You really need to have some downtime before bed. We think that we have to pack everything in and kids come home and they have sports and they have after school activities and then they're doing homework and then they're supposed to go right to bed. They need something that's downtime, some family time, whether that's playing a game, reading a book. Gasp, I know, no one reads anymore, right? Or whatever it is, even if it's watching a show together as a family, family viewing together can be, if you're watching family-friendly programming, that can be a bonding thing. Is it there's story time? You need some downtime before bed. That can be really, really helpful. So let's talk about some teenagers and how we see some sleep trends, because especially for teens, I see a lot of challenges. And teenagers are highly influenced by social media and they say, hey, you're having trouble sleeping, which is a common problem for teenagers. And some of us are really just like, you know, 60-year-old teenagers, right? Like we still have some of those habits there, but viral sleep trends are a really real thing. And oftentimes they promote really poor sleep habits, but somehow get vicarious credibility. If you have a million people who have liked this viral sleep trend, well, it must be a good thing, right? Sometimes it's downright dangerous. And most of the time, what I see is it's just unrealistic. It's just somebody's idea who thought, oh, this would be fun. Let's try this out. But these trends can really negatively impact mental health and school performance. So we need to make sure that we're aware of trends that can happen on any degree of health and talk about what works or what doesn't work. So let me give you some examples of some of the viral trends that I've found that I've gotten questions about. The first one is called revenge bedtime procrastination. I know that's so long, right? That's a long word, revenge bedtime procrastination. So what is this? This is staying up late on purpose to reclaim personal time that you have lost during the day because your schedule is overpacked. It's school, it's work, it's responsibilities. It's, hey, I know I should go to bed, but you know what? I am going to procrastinate because I need some me time. But instead of building that into the day, they just say, I'm just going to lose out on sleep. And usually what they're doing is scrolling through social media, watching some sort of digital media, playing games, despite knowing they should be sleeping. But they categorize it as saying, well, this is revenge bedtime procrastination. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there, busy moms especially, because I've been there, and you don't think, oh, I'm doing revenge bedtime procrastination. But you think, yeah, no, I'm going to stay up and binge watch this show, or I'm going to stay up and scroll through social media or whatever it is. And we say that it's a form of self-care, a way to get back at a busy schedule. But the truth is, chronic sleep deprivation is harmful for us. It is. There's just no other way to say it. It's going to increase our risk of health issues. So some healthier alternatives, what we should be doing and what we should talk to our kids about, and are we modeling that, is having downtime in the evening. Yes, it is great to have downtime. Make sure that you build that into your schedule. What needs to go? What has got to go? And sometimes that can be some hard choices about what's got to go, but kids need some downtime. That's one of the things that's contributing to anxiety in society, because we are go, go, go all the time. Everything is structured. Everything is pressured. Everything is deadline. And we don't have any time just to sit around and just talk. And those things are really important. Nighttime, bedtime conversations are so important. I shared about that last week. Just, you're missing out on an opportunity to connect with your family. So that's really what we've got to do. Okay, here's trend number two that I found, is polyphasic sleep trends. Now, what is this? This means that instead of getting sleep at night, I'm going to nap during the day. Now, I've been guilty of this for sure. So social media influencers say, hey, let me tell you about this polyphasic sleep schedule. Well, all of a sudden, it sounds intriguing. It sounds smart. So sometimes these are called like Uberman or everyman kind of sleep. And basically what it is, hey, I'm just going to take a bunch of short little naps during the day, and then I'm going to get so much more done. This is the greatest sleep hack ever. It boosts productivity. But the truth is, teen brains and our adult brains too, we need at least 8 to 10 hours of consolidated sleep for our memories to work well. Now, when you start to look at the science of a sleep schedule, having those deeper, more quality sleep, it actually helps us to process events that have happened during the day. It processes trauma. It is restorative. We have restorative sleep cycles that happen when we sleep well for longer periods of time. And when we're just sleeping fragmented, then especially thinking about kids and teenagers, it can actually disrupt their growth hormone production. It can disrupt their moods. It disrupts the way they process their emotions. And the truth is, it just makes you more tired, more worn out, and it creates long-term sleep issues. So really, what is the thing? Well, we should be prioritizing full uninterrupted sleep cycle. We need that sleep at night. And if you need a nap, then you should take it about 20 to 30 minutes in early in the afternoon. Creating that consistent bedtime and wake-up routine is really important to do. All right, here's trend number three, sleep supplements, or honestly overusing melatonin. And like I said, you should always talk to your primary care provider before you use any kind of supplement, whether over-the-counter or not. But we see, because they're over the counter, that teens can access them. They can take melatonin gummies or sleep teas or other natural supplements to force sleep. Like, yeah, I know I'm not going to make any lifestyle modifications, but hey, I'll just take this herbal supplement. And again, as a society, we want that quick fix. And there is no quick fix. And there are teens who mix them together. Just this experiment that you see on social media, like dissolving gummies in tea, and there's no research. And that can interact with other medications that they're on. There are all kinds of dangers that are there. But if you're using melatonin long-term, then you are altering your natural sleep cycles. And it is difficult to regulate your body's ability to sleep. And many of those sleep supplements are unregulated. They have different varying degrees of purities and different degrees of concentrations. And they can have unexpected side effects. Just because it's over the counter, just because it's promoted as natural, doesn't mean that it is completely risk-free. So, and also sometimes when you use sleep aids, you're masking underlying things that are happening. There may be a real sleep disorder there, or it may be anxiety that you really need to do something about. So the healthier alternative is, of course, to only use supplements under medical guidance and only short term for sleep adjustments to help you get back into that natural circadian rhythm. Look at the root cause of the sleep problem. Most people who are taking a sleep supplement have some sort of root cause, whether that is a lifestyle, whether that's diet, whether that's schedule, or whether that's something really physiologic. So look at those natural sleep cues. What are the consistent schedules, dim lighting, having a routine at night? I mean, this is not rocket science. I can assure you, I'm married to a rocket scientist, and he thinks it's funny, by the way, that people think I'm the smart one in the relationship. He's brilliant, but he will tell me, this is not rocket science. You are tired because you're not prioritizing your sleep. And honey, you're absolutely right. Okay, here's the fourth trend that I found for teens is the 5-hour sleep productivity challenges. So this is where you see hustle culture influencers basically glorifying sleep deprivation. Like, that's a sign of hard work. Way to hustle, way to go. Sleep is for wimps. We heard again Dr. Vicky say that on this, she used to say that herself. Sleep is for wimp. And, you know, I used to say sleep is for babies, but anybody who says sleep is for babies obviously never had one, because babies don't sleep well at all. Now, when they do sleep, they're usually very peaceful, but that can be problems. But anyway, this productivity challenge, you can see it as like the 5 hours max challenge I've seen it as, or a CEO sleep routine saying, hey, and especially marketing towards teens, hey, don't sleep, be more productive. But you know what? When we see things like that on social media, less sleep hours, less sleep means more marketing. And that's what social media want. They want your eyeballs on that blue light screen, awake 24/7, scrolling through things so that you will buy products for whatever that is. And so a sleeping customer is not a paying customer as far as being marketed to all the time. And I see a lot of teens bragging about pulling consecutive all-nighters. So we know, again, sleep deprivation impairs your ability to think. We see it increases the risk of even suicidal thoughts, which is really a serious thing. But the healthier alternative is, nope, this is a hack that is not true. You need to prioritize sleep as an essential part of productivity. It's not something to be sacrificed. And what do you need to change in your schedule to finish those tasks efficiently without losing sleep? Other ones that I see are ASMR and caffeine for better sleep. So saying ASMR, that's autonomous sensory meridian response. Maybe you've heard ASMR. That's what it stands for. It's basically videos or ambient noise or sleep hypnosis videos every night that you can't go to sleep without them. And even I'm seeing kids who overuse headphones while they're sleeping and damage their hearing even, or cause irritation in their ear canals. I mean, we're talking about major modifications, like we're trying to have these major life hacks, while at the same time, all we need to do is these simple habits. Go to bed on time. Don't look at your phone before you go to bed, and make sure your bedroom is clean and dark and cool. When we come back, I'll finish talking about these TikTok trends, and I'll talk about safe infant sleep for newborns and some concerning trends I'm seeing come out of research. I'll be right back.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Okay. I'm about to have a good day. No matter what they say. The sun is shining down on me. Birds are singing praise. I'm about to have a good day. In every single way. The God who made the universe knows me by my name, so it's a good day.
Welcome back, friends. Are you having a good day on this Friday? Every day is a good day when we are cared for by our Heavenly Father. And today we are talking about nights and sleep. And I'm answering all things sleep on this Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. I get so many questions about sleep. Let me give you some biblical perspective on sleep. Sleep, God designed our bodies to sleep. He designed our bodies to rest. We cannot, in our own wisdom, think that we can have life hacks or ways that we can work around that to say, hey, I'm a little wiser than that. I don't need sleep. Well, God designed you to need sleep. It is a limitation of our human body, but it serves an important function for us emotionally, physically, and spiritually. The verse that I'm memorizing this week comes from Proverbs chapter 3. And the heading of this in Proverbs 3 is, "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom." And there are a lot of scriptures here about wisdom. And couched in the middle of that, we find Proverbs 3:24. "If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet." And we talk about sweet dreams all the time. But God has given us the wisdom that we need to take care of our bodies as He designed them, to take care of our lives, to have the disciplines to live a healthy lifestyle, especially when that comes to sleep. Right in the middle of that, it is, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. But we have to have the wisdom that comes from that. Before the break, I was talking about some of the wisdom that comes from social media, which is really not wisdom, and how we can do these life hacks and how we can really say, hey, here's a justification to say you can do whatever you want to do and you don't need to have the discipline to go to sleep. I know I struggle with this. I'm preaching to the choir. I'm preaching to myself. I know. But we really, as a society, have got to get control of this. So I was talking about ASMR, that autonomous sensory meridian response. These are so big among kids. I mean, when you talk about ASMR, people have ASMR channels that they just have those sounds that give you a brain response. But again, those kinds of things, when we depend on them to sleep, we are just having our body adapt to something that it wasn't designed to do. So some white noise or natural sound sources are actually better. So that would be some nature sounds. If you have to have sound in the room, I know I like that. Rain sounds or just white noise. And then gradually, you got to look at, why do you need that? And what else is going on? Another trend that I see is caffeine for better sleep. So they say, hey, drinking coffee before bed, it doesn't affect some people. And some people, it even helps to sleep better. And then we see, especially teenagers, drinking very high caffeine drinks, which usually have a lot of sugar in them too. Energy drinks, matcha, or the trend that I see is the Sleepy Girl mocktail. So that's a mocktail, of course, doesn't have alcohol in it, but it can have definitely caffeine. But here's the thing, caffeine blocks adenosine, which is a chemical that makes you feel sleepy, and it disrupts our deep sleep and our REM cycles. It increases heart rate, it makes us anxious, and it increases long-term sleep problems. We really need to be avoiding caffeine at least 6 hours before bedtime. But it's hard because kids are up late, they're trying to do their homework, and then they think, okay, I can't stay awake to do my homework, I've got to take this caffeine, but I want to go to sleep instantly, so what do I do? Well, I'm going to take a melatonin gummy, right? See, all of these ways that we are trying to do whatever it is that we want to do without just recognizing what it is that we need to do. And that can be really difficult. So let me give you some key takeaways for encouraging healthy teen sleep and our own sleep as well. So really, it's just avoid those social media trends that say, hey, being sleep deprived and taking supplements and these hacks, like, just know that's not true. Know that you got to sleep 8 to 10 hours a night. You need a consistent sleep routine. You need to turn off your phone or your screen at least an hour before bed. You need to move your body during the day, and you need to limit caffeine intake at night. I mean, really just those simple things can really transform your relationships. And isn't that worth it? To have less irritability, to have more patience to deal with things during the day. Let me talk about some specific teen issues. Now, sometimes there's student athletes. A lot of times we have athletes who are extraordinarily accomplished, but they need to know that they can maximize recovery through sleep. Sleep is crucial for muscle repair, for endurance, for reaction time. And when you're not sleeping, you got slower reflexes, you have poorer performance, you have increased risk of injury because that reaction time is decreased. And growth hormone, that's also essential for muscle recovery, it's released during those sleep cycles. So some hard things for athletes, though, if you have a late night practice, a late night game that you're traveling back from, you have early morning training session, you have that post-exercise adrenaline rush, or your muscles are just sore and you can't sleep. So if you are really waking up really early, maybe this would be a teen who does need a 20 to 30 minute nap in the afternoon to catch up. They need a nighttime cool down routine, whether that's stretching or deep breathing or whatever their athletic trainer recommends. And protein or a carb snack before bed might also, again, talk to your primary care provider about specific needs for sleep athletes, but it helps the muscles recover without disrupting sleep. So that can be something that they need a snack before bed. Making sure that they're hydrated, but drinking those fluids earlier in the day so you don't have a game late at night and then you feel dehydrated and then you drink all this water and then you've got to get up in the night and go to the bathroom. That can be really difficult. I also want to talk about, in addition to athletes, another common question that I get in category is teens who game a lot. They don't sleep because they're gaming either late at night. Again, we've got this blue light exposure suppressing melatonin. We've got a delay of the body's natural sleep-wake cycle, that circadian rhythm. But also we've got adrenaline. You're playing an action-packed, competitive game that triggers a fight or flight response in your brain. It keeps your brain highly alert. You've got the excitement of winning. You've got fast decision-making. You've got social interaction that makes it really difficult to wind down. And if you're playing games late, that can be really disruptive because you're not going to bed. And then there's also this phenomenon I'm seeing called social jet lag, where you have a gaming marathon on the weekend. Like, okay, fine, I'll go to bed during the week, but Friday, Saturday night, I'm not going to sleep hardly at all. And then your body just struggles to adjust back to a normal schedule. And teens who, you know, of course, if you game late at night, you're not sleeping, you have increased stress levels. And especially if you have multiplayer games or online interaction, you're navigating the social aspects of that. That is really, really hard. We've also got dopamine spikes that happen from those in-game achievements, and it makes it difficult to stop, even when you feel tired, because you just want that in-game reward, that multiplayer lobby that just helps you play longer and get those hits of dopamine. But just like other things, it is difficult because you're going to have negative health impacts. So think about some things if you do have a kid who does engage in video games, or maybe a big kid, right? Sometimes we have big kids who like that. What is a game curfew? Can you agree on that as a family to stop intense or competitive gaming about an hour before you're going to go to bed? Use that blue light filter. Create a post-gaming wind-down routine, like making sure they have a routine that they're going to be able to make their brain stop a little bit. Don't drink energy drinks or caffeine drinks right before bed when you're gaming. That can be really, really something that's important to do. And sometimes even just thinking of things of like the lighting on your monitor can be helpful. But those are things, really the most important thing with gaming is boundaries. Just setting boundaries together as a family. Like, when are you going to get off? Let's agree together how long you're going to play and when you're going to stop. Those boundaries are really, really important because it's really hard to self-regulate and they need some accountability that's mutually set on. I also see a lot of busy students who are juggling school and activities and sleep. And that's really difficult because teens who don't get enough sleep because they're up studying, ironically, a lot of times they score lower on tests and they struggle with problem solving. So we see this with late night studying, cramming for exams, having a lot of extracurricular activities, or just being stressed and anxious about your grades. You can't go to sleep. I have lots of questions from parents about that. And really, the sleep strategies for that are study smart, not late. Really, you should break the study sessions into 45-minute blocks. I always say to my students that the brain can only absorb what the bottom can endure. And so sitting for long periods of time isn't good. So set an alarm clock if you have a kid who's studying and go in and just take a 5-minute break. Have them walk around their room, walk around the house, walk around the block. Give them a little snack. That can be really helpful. And set that homework cutoff time, recognizing that studying sometimes really late can be counterproductive. That lack of sleep that you have will impact your reaction time, your ability to think. So at some point you start losing when you're studying because you are giving up on that sleep that you need. And you can plan sleep like a class. That's a great mindset for some kids who see their academics as a non-negotiable part of their schedule. Once you understand how sleep impacts it, treat sleep just like it's a class. That can be helpful. So just sticking to a schedule. Again, I'm saying these things over and over again because they're good for everybody. Avoid caffeine and energy drinks all kids should avoid all energy drinks ever. I'll just put that out there. But just looking at that consistent bedtime, decreasing screen time before bedtime, getting your body active during the day, and thinking about what you're eating and drinking before you go to bed. Those three routines, are you doing normally before bedtime? That can be really, really helpful. Now let's, in our last few minutes here together, let me switch gears and let me talk about babies, because I've been seeing some research coming out talking about safe infant sleeping and how we're seeing an increase in sudden unexpected infant death. Now there's still a lot of research that needs to be done, but we know that we need babies to sleep safe. And moms are not immune to social media trends and seeing that, because we all want the best for our babies. And when we need sleep and sleep is not going well, we are open to any possibility that's going to help us sleep. So let me tell you about some of the trends that I've seen there. This would be aesthetic co-sleeping. So some social media influencers think you got to have this beautiful setup with a plush blanket, a pillow, bumpers, and you know, those gentle sleep approaches with bed sharing. And the honest truth is that the best option for babies is room sharing, not bed sharing. So having that crib or bassinet or play yard near the parents' bed so that you can hear, you can respond quickly, but you're not at risk by co-sleeping. And some of the risk factors that the American Academy of Pediatrics talks about in research is one of the biggest risk factors is being overly tired. Well, what parent of a newborn or a baby do you know that's not overly tired? And I've seen some really tragic situations that have happened from bed sharing, from parents just inadvertently smothering their babies, which is just so terrible to talk about. But that's why it's so important to have safe sleeping, and that can be really important. So safest sleeping is room sharing, not bed sharing, making sure they have a firm, flat sleep surface, no pillows, no blankets, no decor, and that can be really important. I'm also seeing these weighted sleep sacks and weighted blankets, and they're marketed saying, hey, it's deep pressure therapy. They'll calm the nervous system and they reduce startle reflexes. But the truth is they can restrict chest movement. They can reduce oxygen level. And babies don't have really strong musculature muscles around their respiratory symptoms. So they do not recommend weighted infant sleep products because of the risk of sudden infant death and suffocation risk. So a regular sleep sack, not weighted, that might be okay to keep your baby warm. And again, talk to your primary care provider about this, about what is the safest sleep for your baby. We also see a lot of DIY hacks like rolled up blankets or towels or positioning devices, but babies can roll. They can get trapped in unsafe positions, and restricted movement actually prevents their natural motor development, and reflux risks are better managed by feeding, not sleep props. So really no sleep props are recommended. Oh, there's so much more I could talk about. I am out of time for the ABCs of sleep safe, but let me tell you, babies should sleep alone in their own safe space. They should sleep always on their back for both naps and nighttime in a crib that has a firm, flat sleep surface. And those are ways. But make sure if you have a baby, talk to your primary care provider about safe sleep for babies and make sure that you are giving your baby the safest, sleepest, the sweetest sleep possible. And remember, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. And I pray that as you sleep, the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And I'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.